Hi, this is Fabi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
And we are
Latinos Who Lunch,
the podcast where we talk about important things like
Carly Rae Jepsen's bangs.
Down.
Hello, hello, hello.
Kisho, kisho, kisho.
How are you, Babelito?
I am here enjoying a cerveza. How are you?
I'm great. Enjoying my water. Because it's still daylight out and God can see me drinking. So I wait till it gets dark.
Well, let's get into it because we are in the presence of Latinx social media royalty.
Oh, shit.
A fellow Frida Kahlo hater.
Dun, 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 dun.
Welcome to the show, Ruben, better known as Queer Chicano Chisme.
Yay! Clap
hello,
me.
Hello. Thank you for such a grand introduction.
Hey, how Hi. You doing?
I'm, you know, aquí sudando.
La gota gorda.
La gota gorda, yeah. I'm drinking because it's fucking like late at night. It's because the sun is out because it's like the desert. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. God doesn't live in the desert.
Yeah.
Los Angeles do, though.
Ay, güey.
Cuánta violencia.
I was an English major.
Damn, bitch, you are moving me. So, let's talk about what we had for lunch today since we are Latinos. Who lunch?
Well, go for it.
¿Qué comiste? What I had? I had leftover pizza.
Ooh, what kind?
Always good.
Chicken, bacon, ranch. And I had this little chorizo thing. Biscuit.
Be specific, girl.
Chorizo biscuit. Okay. Breakfast biscuit.
Oh.
And a lot of coffee.
Because when you say so chorizo thing, you know.
No, I don't know.
Oh, like a sausage biscuit? Or no, like chorizo.
Yeah, chorizo, yeah.
Ooh. Where is that from?
I know where it is from.
Chick-fil-A! Oh, bitch.
I'm gonna lose them points.
Stay woke, America. So, oh my gosh. Let's talk about pizza for a second because I think it's really important to talk about pizza in relation to ranch dressing. Mm. I think that pizza and ranch go together. It's like salt and pepper, right? Like it's American, first of all. And you don't think so?
It's Italian.
Oh, girl. You ranch? Think they eat ranch in Italy?
Oh, ranch? I don't know. I thought pizza because Lady Gaga invented pizza.
Oh, she did. Oh, she did. True. She also invented ABBA.
And gay rights.
Yes. She actually threw the first brick at Stonewall, right?
No, that was Shania Twain. We spoke about this. I don't know why you're feigning ignorance.
Oh my God. I forgot it was Shania Twain. You're right.
Why don't you guys elaborate on your Shania Twain love?
You want to talk about it?
We're going to get dry, girl. No, okay, okay. Yeah, no, I love Shania Twain. I always love Shania Twain. I'm always like really excited when I meet someone, especially a person of color who also loves her because she's white as fuck. She's a white person appropriating white people music because she's Canadian, but she sings country. And like, I'm always surprised when like non-Americans sing country.
Yeah,
me too.
Because yeah, I just found out that like it's big in Australia and in the UK. But anyways, so when I met Fabi, right? In Vegas, I went for like a family trip. We started talking about Shania, and I was like really pleasantly surprised that we both shared this love for her. And before anybody jumps in, I know what she said about Trump, but she also made a clarification where she was like, no, I obviously do not support him. Like, yes. Blah, blah. I didn't really explain myself well in that interview.
Ay, la defiende.
Well, ya sabes como son. También a chavos.
So Ruben was like, did you know Shania Twain threw the first brick at Stonewall? And like, I was like, yes, I have the pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want me to burn your DVD? I got you.
And you were in Vegas to see J-Lo. How was that?
I was.
How was it?
Jennifer Lopez. She through. Yeah. I love her. Me and my older sister, like, we grew up, like, idolizing her. Everything she did was magic. My family, collectively, we were, like, big J-Lo supporters. We would go to the movies to to see all the Gila movie premieres. Like, we saw even Gili in theater.
Do you guys change identities with her throughout time?
Yeah, we all identified as Italian back in the day, right? And then we, you know, we went through different stages of being Boricua. And then,
she's like, Puerto Rican again.
Black. Yeah, she's Puerto Rican again.
Yeah.
Thanks to Cardi B.
Well, thanks to, like, finding out that she can no longer, like, appropriate black culture and that people are going to think that's okay, right?
Yeah.
It only took her, like, a decade.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was, like, also I went to her show and, like, as much as I love her, like, I criticize the things that I love to the max.
Yeah,
like,
we all do.
That's, if I don't give a shit about something, then I'm not going to talk about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
For example, in my show, I have a lot of angry white people, right, that come to me and like, oh, your show or your platform is really anti-white and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I actually talk about white people the least because I don't give a fuck about y'all. I talk about other Latinxes, right, the most, and other Chicanxes, because that's who I want to make better, help make better, right? And also I want to work with. That's, my community is Latinx. It's brown and black people, indigenous people. It ain't no fucking gringo, right? So when it comes to...
They have their platforms.
They have a lot of shit that they can waste their time on, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And
Ellen.
Before you continue, tell us a little bit, before you talk about your podcast, tell us a little bit about Queer Chicano Chisme, how it started, how it took off, because now it seems like it's its own thing.
Yeah, I wasn't even done talking about J-Lo, but okay.
Well, put a pin in it.
Pin in J-Lo.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so Queer Chicano Chisme was something that I came up with. It was like a journey to even find out that I could do that, right? So I was an English major in college, and I wanted to write, but I saw that, like, the writing landscape, like, for, like, authors and any writers in general, it's not... Like, you're good and you get noticed and you get a job and you get to live off your writing. It's like you get connections, you have a platform, you have people who vouch for you, and that's how you make it in the writing industry, like in the publishing
industry. The academic world in general.
Yeah, academic world. And for me, like, I fucking hated academia. For me, it was just a way to, like, to not be, you know, homeless anymore, essentially. And so as I was reaching, like, my graduation, I was like, what the fuck am I going to do with this English degree? Like, I want to be a writer and I believe in my abilities, but I also know the realities of the world. So at the time, Pero Like was hiring people, right? They were like having a boom. A lot of Latinx social media was having a boom.
Yeah.
And
like 2-3 years ago?
Yeah, like 3 years ago. And I was like, I want to be part of that boom, so let me apply for them, right? But then Kat Black, she's a YouTuber. She's a black trans woman of size who has a major platform. She came to my school to give a talk about social media, and this is her second time in like a month, right? The previous time she talked about rape culture.
Mm-hmm.
But the second time she came around, she was just like, hey, let's go have drinks. I think she recognized me because I was a big fan of hers. And so I went to have drinks with her, and she was like, and I started talking about like what I wanted to do. And she was like, don't do that. Like, don't work for anyone. Work for yourself. Like, you can do this. I'm like, Kat, I'm broke. Like, I'm poor. Like, I can't.
Yeah.
So at the time, I was going to start my YouTube channel. And I wanted to have a video presence, and I'm like, I don't even know how to work camera equipment. I can't even think about owning camera equipment. Right? And she's just like, do it. And I'm like, no. And she's like, trust me, you can do it. And I sat with that for a little while, and I didn't do anything. And then I
shout out to the hood.
Shout out to the hood, yeah. And I didn't do anything for a minute. But then Pulse happened. And it happened the day of my graduation, and it hit hard. It hit, like, really, really hard. Like, I almost didn't want to go to my graduation. But afterwards, I just started writing on my personal Facebook, and my graduation cap, I had dedicated it earlier that week to all the sissy brown boys that couldn't, right? Because I graduated really late in life for a lot of people. Like, not late in, like... Like, I'm only 29, but at the time I was, like, 26 when I graduated. And so 27, 26. And so it was, like, a 9-year struggle to graduate. And so I was, like, a lot of people were decorating their caps. And like, thank you to my familia and to my patria and all this shit. And I'm, like, mi familia and, like, mi comunidad were, like, in a lot of ways, like, those are the things that kept me from graduating, right? Because... my family kicked me out of the house when I came out. So I had to, like, struggle to, like, not be homeless for a very long time.
Wow.
And along the way, the people that kept me alive were other queer people of color, trans people of color, right? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of them, and some of them were not with us anymore. And so I was like, the only thing I can dedicate this to is to other people who couldn't walk at stage for whatever reason. So I wrote a poem and it went viral. And then that whole week after Pulse, I just started writing things on my personal page and they would all just go viral. I would put out like resources for healing and words of healing and offer to hold healing spaces for people in person and all these things. Like, people would take me up on these things. And eventually I was like, wait, there's a voice here that people are connecting with, right? And I realized too at the same time that like the coverage of Pulse was like they whitewashed it in LGBT publications.
Yes.
And then they cishet washed it in like mm-hmm. Latinx publications, right? So when this thing happened, my mother just thought it was like a Latinx like cumbia night, like whatever, right? And she didn't know that it was queer and trans people. And then all the visuals, right, that happened after Pulse, they were very like white run. I remember one of them was like Lady Gaga singing her fucking whack ass Born This Way song where she calls Latinos like Chola descent, Latinxes of Chola descent, right? Like, how are you gonna have that be like the rallying cry after like Latinxes get shot? Yeah. And then they had Nick Jonas in another one. I'm just like, how the fuck is this appropriate? How the fuck is this how we're handling this?
Por lo menos Ricky Martin. Well,
I think somebody did have him, right? But still, the point was that, like, I didn't feel like people were, like, taking the, like...
Seriously?
Yeah. And so I was just, like, writing for a while, and then I just got too much attention on my personal page. And I was just, like... And I had strangers, like, asking for help and, like things that were outside of my capacities, right? I'm one person with, like... limited knowledge, right? And so I started Queer Chicano Chisme like a couple weeks after that because I was like, I saw people like Chicanisma doing it, Latina Rebels, Cat Black, just have blogs, right? And so I was like, oh, I'll just start like a Facebook blog. At the time, I was only Facebook because I didn't even know how to use Twitter at the time. And so I just started posting articles and then from there, just like snowballed into something else. After that, like a couple months after I started on Facebook, my Twitter really took off and I still feel the most comfortable on Twitter because I can just talk shit about everything and anything mm-hmm. and it's easier to clap back at people. It's just like my preferred platform. And Instagram, I just learned how to use like last summer. but that's Queer Chicano Cheese, man, in a nutshell. Like a multi-platform that's soon going to spin off into YouTube.
Awesome. Nice. And then you also have... a podcast mm-hmm. that you do with a co-host.
Yeah.
And that one's called Bitter Brown Femmes.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So Bitter Brown Femmes is a podcast I co-host with Cassandra, who you might know as Chicanisma, which is a podcast about like society, community, politics, activism, pop culture. And we just, you know, go hard against and talk shit for a good 2 hours because...
It is good.
We were just angry at, like, how everybody just stops at representation politics, I feel. Like, a lot of the times there's, like, not a, like, an in-depth critique about things. Or, like, mm-hmm. people don't rally. They, for example, like, Dolores Huerta, we just all accept her as, like, this glorious, like, pinnacle of, like, activism. And, like, nobody should talk bad about Dolores Huerta. But she's done so many bad things. Like, thrown the Filipino community under the bus, right? Undocumented people under the bus, right? Had spilled out a lot of anti-black rhetoric throughout the years, right? You know, fucking campaign with Hillary, motherfucking, like, yeah. Coup Clinton, right? Like, all these horrible things that everyone's, well, it's like, everyone's too scared because, oh, the grape strike or whatever. And I was just like, okay, bitch, like, that's fine and dandy and that's important and she should be respected, mm-hmm. but she should also be criticized, right? People don't grow if they're not criticized, but in... And especially if they don't accept that criticism, right? Yeah. So me and Cassandra, we've only met twice in person. Our podcast is, she lives in El Paso, Texas, and I live in LA. And previously I lived in the Bay. But we've only met once and in Portland for this gig. And we just hit it off immediately. And we were just like, you hate this shit. I hate this shit. Like, And we, there was never a moment of awkwardness between us.
Can I say how beautiful it is when you meet somebody that hates the same shit that you do? It's not about liking the same shit that you do. It's about hating the same shit that you do.
Yeah.
That's important.
Yeah.
Jesus so, Christ.
It is.
Yeah. It doesn't like, I mean, I wouldn't be like, make all your relationships based on something you hate. But like, for us, it was like dislike of something specific within our own community that we didn't see anyone else like attacking and that we felt like, we need to talk about this. Like, we don't, like, our first episode that was now removed due to quality issues, like, it was basically a full episode talking about, like, Latinx and Chicanx white supremacists, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's such a big thing in our communities.
It is.
That we don't talk about at all, right? Because todos somos una raza, we're all one race and all that shit, right? And it's just like, no, like, that's rhetoric that y'all spill out so that we can erase Black people and in our community and put a, you know, put the white people in a pedestal and like excuse them for all the shit that they do, right? And so we clicked, we began shooting like 3 months after we met, and we've tried to put out at least, we haven't missed a month of episodes, but it's been difficult to organize, right? Because you know, she's a mother and we're in different states and things like that.
Wow. When I remember the first time I talked to you and we started talking about Frida, I was like, wow. Like, I've never met somebody, and it's true. It's that it's not about just hating. It's about holding our community critical to the things that we follow and that we like, because that's important. Otherwise, we're just going to keep creating mediocre shit. And that happens a lot. I mean, I feel like our position, like, and I mean, this is bad language, but like in the periphery of culture in the United States has pushed us to just support each other and be good with each other, but we forget to be critical with each other. But I feel like sometimes it's better because we actually push each other to be better and create better content out there instead of just like supporting.
Yeah, and there's a difference between like hating something and then being critical because you want people to make better content. Mm-hmm. And you can still make mediocre things that are not problematic. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's a shit that's mediocre and it's ignorant as fuck on purpose. Like, that's what I'm like, dude. I used to be, when I first started listening to podcasts, for example, I would listen to every single Latinx podcast that I could find.
Yeah.
And some of the podcasts that I was listening to were hella ignorant.
Yeah.
And finally I was like, I'm not supporting these people anymore. Like, just because they're Latinx doesn't mean that the messaging is right and they're actually helping us, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Speaking of, let's keep talking about J-Lo.
I like mediocre things. No, I like pop music a lot, but
my advisor always says we need some room to be uncritical about things.
Yeah.
Like, we all need that. Otherwise, it's just too much.
I guess for me is like,
girl, you like Vampire Weekend like me. Like,
I love Vampire Weekend.
I love Vampire Weekend, but they're fucking problematic as fuck too.
Yeah.
Why? What's Vampire Weekend?
Vampire Weekend is this like indie preppy white
rich
band from they're all like Ivy League
from Transylvania.
And they talk about just money and shit like that. And especially in the first couple albums, the last one, it's all about religion. It's actually pretty amazing. But
a little bit, I don't know. I loved it before I was like political, and then I was like, fuck, they sure do talk a lot about Israel on this album. And so in this last concert that I went to see them, and I was feeling a little spicy, so I just like, whenever they would say like Israelites or like Zion, I would just be like, free Palestine out of my lungs. They didn't kick me out of the concert.
They kick you out?
No, they didn't. And luckily, like, I didn't even really pay for it. So I was like, just there, thanks to a follower who's now a friend. Shout out.
Shout out to free tickets.
So back to J-Lo.
Tell me about the show in Vegas. How was it?
It was fantastic. It was like such a good time. She was amazing. I was like looking at how she would handle some of her work that was like anti-Black. Like, she says the N-word and I'm real, right?
Yeah.
And so
did she do it live?
No,
she felt Black, so she felt like she could say it.
Yeah. I don't think she did it. I don't know what she did back in the day, because back in the day you had to catch performances live or like the chingadas, right? There was no YouTube to watch things.
Yeah.
But I wanted to see, I was like, how is she gonna do this? And so when that word comes up, she just puts the mic down completely. Like, she just doesn't give it to the audience, she just like drops it and then picks it up, like as soon as like that word would be said.
What?
And so I was like, okay, like,
she knows now.
Yeah, I think she's learned. But then she wore dreads in the El Anillo video. So I was like, how much
is this? No.
So I was like, I think she needs some more learning.
I don't like her, but those two, the Dinero song and the El Anillo song.
And I love El Anillo. And so, yeah, no, like, and that's what I say too in the podcast with Cassandra's, like, we both love problematic shit. Like, I ride for Cardi B. Like, I do love her. That doesn't mean that I can admit and like,
yeah,
when she does fucked up shit. Yeah. Right. But at the same time, I know there's people who are more capable than me to critique her,
yeah,
right? Like, there's black trans girls out here who are actually being like, this is why she's wrong, and blah, 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 and this and that. Like, with miles more understanding than I could ever have.
Right.
So what I do in these instances is like, yeah, I know she fucked up. And because I've played her in my own podcast, right? But I also been like, and so I'll post resources for people. So for Cardi, this is an essay written by Najma, I forgot her last name, and she wrote about how like a lot of people use problematic black people to like be anti-black, right? Yeah. It's a vehicle for that, right? So all of a sudden, especially for misogynoir, right, the hate against violence against black women, right? And so Cardi B has slip-ups, and then people use that to just let out all the anti-blackness they can, right? They're like, F this person, and like blah blah blah, like in worse terms, right?
Mm-hmm.
That they have been waiting to use, right? And so like, I'm not gonna be the vehicle for that,
for
right?
That, yeah. If you're not careful enough, you could be, yeah, right, yeah,
yeah. And so that's something that like, it's not like I woke up one day and was like, I'm not gonna be the vehicle for, you know, anti-blackness. It's like, no, it was like a learning process, and like, you know, while I was learning, I was obviously hurting people. So like, it's also been like a road of like reflection and like accountability.
Right. And this is why we need different platforms for different people. Like, I feel like we, in a way, I feel a responsibility to be critical about Latinx visual culture. I feel like that's my job, even though if I don't get paid for it, I feel like I have to do that, right? So I cannot, that stops me from enjoying a lot of things that a lot of other people seem to be enjoying. But that's what I do. But this is why I have other outlets where I can just like turn off my brain and listen or watch. But when it comes to my community and the shit that is being created, I take that as an actual personal responsibility. And some people hate that I hate, but it's, again, it's not about hate. It's about pushing each other to be better, man. Because yeah, otherwise, it's what we're talking about, Coco. Like, if people paid attention to some of the criticisms that we have, because I heard your podcast on Coco as well.
Oh, yeah. And like, I fought with that creator, too.
Yeah. And it's not like people that are making the movies are watching, listening. But if they were, maybe they pay attention to those problems in the next Coco that is coming out. You know what I mean? So.
But this is shit, is that because todos estamos like,
se la jalan con
everything,
Coco.
Everything is perfect. And like, how dare you? I remember when I started, because I was like, I went for like a month on Coco, and sometimes it wasn't even that I wanted to keep talking about this shit, but people saw me critiquing it, and they were attacking me and subtweeting me and just be like, why can't you just let us like enjoy something? And then somebody was like, you are my they're like, my mom who like, you know, came here, hasn't been back to Mexico, yeah, like you're not letting her enjoy this. And I'm like, I'm not like knocking on your mom's door like being like, don't like Coco. I was like, I'm talking in my space,
yeah,
in my home, and you're listening to me, and you have to question like why you feel attacked in some way. And obviously, you know, it pinched a nerve, right? And then eventually the cultural, what's it called, consultant for Coco
reached out to you.
No, attacked me.
on Twitter?
On Twitter, yeah.
What did they say?
So it was like a long, drawn-out thing. Because, I was on this fucking Coco train unfortunately, for ages. Because when I was... Because people wouldn't let me just fucking live on with my life. I was supposed to take a break last year from Twitter. Because I needed to work on my Patreon content, right? Because Patreon is where people can support me and who actually give a fuck about and can support my work, right? And so I was like, I have a responsibility to these people who want me to be great,
yeah,
right? And I want to supply content for them. But for like 2 months, like if it wasn't like Coco fans and people who felt like really like attacked by, you know, a critique, like a just critique of it, right? And this was like also me. It was even the fact that like I would retweet and share essays by like undocumented people, indigenous people who felt some type of way about the mestizaje, about the border, like mechanic in the movie, right? Things like that. They would like hate me. And eventually Lalo Alcaraz started tweeting like transphobic shit and retweeting transphobic shit from Gustavo Arellano, right?
And so, those are like the two leading
Chicano, like
that's like the connection between Hollywood and our communities.
Yeah.
Yep. And so when I got in a fight with Gustavo, I was like, you're tweeting a lot of transphobic shit right now, and like, you know, blah blah blah. And eventually this led to Gustavo tweeting like the N-word multiple times, and like people like revived my my hashtag that I popularized called Boycott Gustavo Arellano. That was like
that was you, girl.
Yeah, that was me and a bunch of other Central American folks, right? Yeah. We popularized it, but I was like kind of like the main vehicle for it, because 2-3 years ago, he just started. I forgot what he published or what he responded to. Oh, somebody critiqued one of his essays, and he responded with like calling someone a cerote, right? Which is like has different contexts. Mm-hmm. It's like a slang word between Salvadorans, right? Of like kind of endearment and like paisano. Mm-hmm. But when Mexicans use it, right, it's like a slur, right? Because we're using it to demean people.
Yeah, it's like shit or something like that.
Yeah. So that started then, and then ever in the 2 years since then, he's published a bunch of trash, such as like, Mexicans shouldn't cry about white people appropriating our food because we do it ourselves. And it's just like,
what
lack of nuance, right? And so things like that, he kept publishing and I kept calling him out. And then finally, when I called him out against his transphobia, people really like jumped on that, right? Because it was being violent. He was like rallying all his followers, right? And so finally he blocked me and I blocked him. And then then at the same time, Lalo Alcaraz published like a little cartoon mocking gender inclusive language. He was and so I was calling him out on that, and I was like, this is y'all's, just so y'all know that our critiques are coming from somewhere when it relates to Coco, right? This is a person that Hollywood trusted to put our image out there, right? Mm-hmm. What kind of shit are they getting if the person who's feeding them our culture is transphobic? Right. Mm-hmm. And so he got on his feelings and we ended up like, you know, fighting on Twitter. His followers and Gustavo Arellano's followers were on my ass for like a fucking month. And finally, he even accused me of like my icon. I wear like a flower crown. He accused me of like wearing a flower crown to make fun of Gustavo Arellano's wife, and I'm just like,
what?
It was like, what? You've
been doing that for a long time.
Yeah, and it's like a nod to like Xochipilli. Like, what the fuck? Like, just it was dealing with cishet men that we praise because of representation, and that's what I fucking hate the most. Like representation and the need, like for us to like not be critical of it, because any mierda que nos dan, like that should be enough.
Nos gusta.
Yeah.
Bottom line is that we cannot trust anything that comes from Hollywood, mm-hmm. because at the end of the day, rich white people read that script and it was safe for them. Mm-hmm. So if it's safe for them, that's the first fucking red flag.
Yep.
That's it.
Because at the end of the day, they just want to sell Dia de los Muertos merch. Because we have to remember that Coco was titled Dia de los Muertos.
Bitch, I was just in Puebla and that's it. Like, I saw fucking Coco shit everywhere. And I'm like, that's it. They took the celebration. And I mean, we were together for Dia de los Muertos in Huacachula and stuff, and it was prior to Coco, and it was its own thing. Now it's about, you see characters, you see people dress like the kid from Coco, taking pictures with people in El Zócalo. Like, that's it. And that's what I would like, as soon as I started watching the movie, I'm like, and as soon as I started understanding the phenomenon, I'm like, they're gonna take this. Just like fucking the parade that it's also happening in Mexico City. It's almost like it doesn't belong to us anymore. It was in a
James Bond movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's so crazy.
So before we move on, I know there's a lot of listeners that know what some of these terms mean, but just in case it's your first time listening and you haven't heard our podcast or Queer Chicano Chismes podcast. Let's talk about some words that you've said. So far you said cis. What does that mean? How do you spell that, first of all?
Cis is an abbreviation of the word cisgender, mm-hmm. right? And it implies to people who are not trans, right? Mm-hmm. So if the if you're assigned sex, right? If, you know, when you were born, the doctor was like, this is a boy, this is a girl. And you woke up and you, I mean, you grew up and you were like, oh, the doctor is right. I am a boy, mm-hmm. or a girl, right? That means you're cis, right? Yeah. Cis means same. Right.
You identify so your sex with and your gender match.
Yeah, your assigned sex, right? Yes. Because we have discussions about how, like, sex and gender are actually the same thing, and, like, we have to stop, like, being biological essentialists. But, like, that's a whole other, like...
Another thing, yeah.
Yeah, but, and then...
Het.
Is an abbreviation for heterosexual, right?
Yeah.
That's when you like someone who is, you know, the perceived, like, opposite sex.
And to you, what is queer?
Queer means not cishet.
Mm. Exactly. Okay.
And I don't have any like rules of like, this is what it means to be queer. And like, this is what I mean. Blah. Like, I do think there's a definition, like a, I do think there's a line between like being gay and being queer. Cause like specifically when it comes to cis men,
mm-hmm.
I think there's cis gay men culture, like definitely. And that's not, to me, that's not very queer. Like, and so, but some gay men can be queer, and I think that's like a I think that's like a gray area.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I'm not gonna be like, you're like a fucking like gay. Like, don't use
you're
that.
The identity police.
Yeah, like I'm not like I don't have time for that. Like I don't give a fuck. Like
you're too busy fighting with Gustavo Arellano.
Yeah, I'm too busy, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So you have all these platforms. Do you still have a day job or you're fully dedicated to?
I'm fully dedicated to this now.
Wow.
Damn.
This past batch of interviews from people from LA, it's just, they are a good reminder that we can do what we like to do and we can just push it. So when did you just stop working and you just work on your...
At the end of last year, end of October, I was just like, there's a lot of work to do here. And I've come from like a background of like organizing and teaching for like the better part of a decade.
Yeah.
Right. I have a background in, helping LGBT youth, when I lived in Ventura. And then prior to that, I have a background in like teaching, and organizing in the like North California area, so like mm-hmm. Sacramento, Davis, about like HIV crisis prevention and things like that, and survivor advocacy, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I have a lot of knowledge. I don't have the physical capacities to be on the ground anymore.
Yeah,
but I can do this. I can write and I can record and I can tape, right? And I can do this, and there seems to be a need, and I just, you know, trusted that my community will have my back, and they have. But like the last year, I've been able to teach in different schools, right? My thing is that like mm-hmm. People are like, why are you like charging? And I'm like, at the end of the day, I'm charging schools. I'm not charging individuals. Yeah. I'm not charging your mama.
You're not charging institutions.
I'm charging institutions who owe me some fucking money.
Yeah.
Right? And this doesn't come from student fees. It comes from like schools always separate money
mm-hmm.
that are like, this is for different enhancing programs that, you know, to enrich your education here.
Yeah.
Right. And so I'm like, I'm taking institutions money. And that's what, and students are advocating for me to, you know, to go teach and,
right.
you know, get this money.
So you do workshops or?
I do workshops. Oh. I do lectures. People can book me at bookings@itqxc.com. but yeah, I do different teachings about like rape culture, survivor advocacy, community healing, community building online. Chicanismo and being critical of it. What else? And masculinities and what I've coined
toxic like, masculinity.
Yeah, and machismo and saving your femininity and things like that. And yeah, I've been doing this full time. Hopefully, when my YouTube channel launches, I can dedicate even more time to that.
So tell us a little bit more, because it's something that you've talked about in other platforms and in other podcasts. Tell us a little bit about chisme. Like, why do you use that?
Yeah.
And how you have reappropriated this into something important and positive.
Yeah. I'm not even entirely sure that I've, like, personally reappropriated so much as I've, like, served to remind people that chisme has always served a radical function.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've just been taught by patriarchy and machismo that it isn't worth anything. But, you know, our mamas, our, you know, women and, you know, femmes and queer people and trans people, like, we wouldn't survive without it.
Yeah.
Like, for shit. Especially when you're a survivor, especially when you're an activist. Like, the only ways that you can safely walk this world sometimes is by, like, trusting immaterial truths that others tell you, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what I believe chisme to be. It is something that you cannot always be like, here's statistics, this is blah, 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 and this is evidence that this happened. It's like things you have to trust one another are true, right? And so something that I talked about with Locatora Radio and we, like, conceptualized together, right, was ethical chisme, right? The fact that you have to be, you know, conscious of, like, power dynamics, of how you can hurt people if your chisme isn't ethical, mm-hmm. if it's, you know, if you're using it for bad, right? But activists, right, we use chisme because there's a lot of times we can't be telling other people, like, this is where the action's gonna be and this is how, you know, we're gonna, like, fuck up the system. And it's like, shit has to be low pro, mm-hmm. because we're always being surveilled. We live in a fucking surveillance state, right? And when it comes to survivors, right, survivors aren't believed. Like, even when we live in the, como dicen, like, the headlines in the era of Me Too, mm-hmm. right, and I'm doing, like, air quotes, is like, people still don't believe survivors, right? Like, no matter what people say, at the end of the day, all these men have been outed, right, in the last mm-hmm. year. But even as we saw, like, and I dedicated a whole episode to Juno Diaz, right?
Oh, yeah.
Last podcast,
that's right.
One of my last podcasts, is that even with him, you saw a lot of, like, Latinas and Latinxes, like, batting for this man hard. Even though you have, like,
I didn't follow up. They did?
Yeah. Damn. They a bunch of academics wrote a letter.
I saw that you posted the academics that supported him.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew. So we stayed informed. And you put, or you, did you do it, or you put a link to the, to who they were, what they taught, at what school, just so you knew.
Yep.
Because I need to see that list.
Yep. Yeah.
Because these, because at the end of the day, look, it's not even just about Juno Diaz, but these women and all these other folks are, like, batting for this dude in such a public way.
Yeah.
Who are they batting for privately, right? Because these are problems that plague Latinx communities, like, immensely.
Always.
Right? We defend abusers to no end.
Yeah.
And we normalize that defense, right? We tell our kids to be careful around this relative instead of being like, relative, get the fuck out of here,
mm-hmm.
right? Instead of kicking out abusers, we tell people to cover up. We tell young girls to cover up. And, you know, we exile our queer people because they're the bad ones, right? Instead of, like, cishet male abusers who do shit, right? And so the same thing with these teachers, right, who were, like, who didn't like the way we were treating Juno Diaz, right? It was just, like, that, because even when we are on that level, no one believes shit, right? Because it's, like, as above, so is below, right? We need chisme to protect people. Be like, hey, this person is fucked up. This person is an abuser. Protect yourself. Like, I'm telling you because I trust you. Like, that's how we protect one another as survivors, right?
Yeah.
And when we go back in time to, like, you know, to the eras where, like, trans people and queer people couldn't even walk the streets because we would get arrested, right? The only places where we would organize would be places where we would learn through word of mouth, right? So safety only came to us through chisme. Yeah.
Wow.
Damn.
And that's, and also, it's important to, because I always hear this excuse. Well, will that erase the work they did? Nobody's essential. Nadie es esencial. And we can all create our own culture. So that should be the last of our worries, because they are, they were a leading figure for a long time, or because they were creating something important. That doesn't mean that it's not going to happen, didn't happen before, because most of the time there's always somebody in the background that never gets mentioned, and it doesn't mean it cannot happen after. So nadie es esencial, so don't even think about it. I don't say that to my students because we talk about the death of the author. We always talk about when you understand biography and then you see the art, what cancels what. And I never give them the answer. I let them deal with that because sometimes finding that answer, you can find that the hard way, right? Mm-hmm. But when it comes to cases like that, I feel like that shouldn't be a question. We shouldn't question giving them not even that benefit of the doubt whatsoever. Yeah. Because there's probably more Junior Diaz before him and there's going to be many more after him. And that's what we have to concentrate on.
And the thing is, too, is like cishet men ain't shit. Like, you think cishet men get to the top because they're good? No, they get to the top because they push a lot of people out of the way. Mm-hmm. And because society allows them to push those people out of the mm-hmm. way. How many women, queer, trans people didn't get a chance because Junior Diaz had the chance?
And because the system is created for you to succeed too.
Right? And so for me, it's like, hopefully now we get to see a lot more other voices. And in an ideal world, that would be the case. But it's, you know, it's probably not going to happen. It might not be the case without more fighting. Especially if we keep fucking batting for abusers, right? Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned, like you tell your students, like, just not, that you don't give people the answer mm-hmm. about, like, separating, like, artists from art. And for me, when it comes to abusers, it's very simple.
Yeah.
It's, for me, it's just like, you know, Woody Allen's fucked up. I'm not going to go watch a fucking Woody Allen film. Mm-hmm. Like, R. Kelly's horrible. Like, I'm not going to go listen to R. Kelly's music.
That always blows my mind when people are like, dude, how are you not going to listen to R. Kelly? How are you not going to listen to Kanye? Like, really easy. It's really easy not to listen to that shit.
And like, yeah, and the Kanye one, like you mentioned, like that one actually, like that was the first time I think when I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
Like, because I used to love that man. Like, and I remember someone was like explaining that, like, how the relationship with Kanye, like why it hurt so many people is because a lot of us trusted him for a very long time. And then for him to flip it on us so bad, like, I'm sorry, like, it did hurt, but it's very easy for me to just say, I'm not going to support this fucking person that's very actively an advocate for white supremacy. It's very simple to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to be the biggest Bill Cosby fan, and I threw away the records. I have all his vinyl comedy, like, I had the whole collection.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck this dude.
Yeah.
And I even thought in my head, like, maybe I'll just donate it, but I'm like, you know what, fuck this. I'm throwing this shit away.
Yeah.
And like Roseanne growing up was a very special show to me, but fuck the bitch. She's dead to me. Bye. Like, mm-hmm. whatever. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, it's not that hard to make the choice. And people are always romanticize it again because of cishet men, because usually they're like, well, Woody Allen, can't you separate the art from the man? I'm like, no, he's a fucking piece of shit. Yeah. Like, no.
And oftentimes, like, their art is incredibly reflective of their...
Yes.
Yes.
Right? Because before I found out Woody Allen, like, I used to live across one of the biggest, like, movie stores in the U.S. when I lived in Ventura. And it was, like, two separate buildings. They had, like, just giant film selections. And they used to separate by director. And so I used to go rent movies, and I think I went through a lot of Woody Allen films. I was like, these are great, but they all have the same plot. And the plot was like older Woody Allen figure meets younger white girl who's barely legal, seduces her, and like teaches her about the world, and she becomes a better person because of him. Literally almost the plot to all of his movies, right? How is that not reflective of how he abused young women, how he married his stepdaughter? Like, that's hard. Like, this is like... fucked. And R. Kelly talks about like he calls himself the Pied Piper. Like, that's like a child abuser. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, these men are not slick because men ain't shit. Like, and Junior Diaz, all his books are about machismo, and we let it pass because we all thought he was criticizing machismo, but no, he was just like,
this is me.
A reflection. Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah. I feel like it's not that hard. You're absolutely right. And this is a good lesson, man. Like, we should be critical at all time, especially to our community, because if we don't hold each other responsible to the shit we say and we do, nobody else is going to do, and then we're going to continue repeating the same cycles.
But then on the other hand, I hear you talking a lot about problematic faves on your podcast.
Yeah.
And, I mean, sometimes we can't let go of people. And because there's like a little bit of, okay, the person that I'm thinking about right now is like Azealia Banks. Okay. Right? Yeah. She says a lot of problematic shit, but I still haven't completely let her go yet.
Yeah.
Because I know that there's a lot of pain behind the words that she's saying because she is a black woman that's been attacked from day one.
Yeah.
And I mean, I still don't. It's a total guilty pleasure, and I don't talk about it, but I'm talking about it right now.
No, I have
But it's like I completely haven't let her go yet.
Me either.
You know? Because I feel like there's something there about her that I can see she's just trying to work through things, and there is a little bit of mental illness maybe that's never talked about, or people don't like to talk about it, and how that kind of also, you know, factors into things. But anyway.
No, you're absolutely right. For me, like, there's a difference between problematic and abusive.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right?
There you go. Yes,
abusive, you're directly hurting somebody.
Yeah.
You're, you know, and I think hurtful is somewhere between these things, right? You know, Bill Cosby, Johnny Depp, you know, Woody Allen, you know, these men have directly hurt someone, right? Or multiple people, like in Woody Allen, Juno Diaz, or Kelly's case, right? You know, hurtful, you know, problematic is like someone says, and I'm not like saying like, oh, you know, racism is like excusable, but like people say fucked up things, you know, when I was younger, I'm pretty sure I did too. Mm-hmm. And I changed and I became a better person, right? And so there's space for people to allow that problematic, allow people to grow and learn. And if they never learn, then that's when they become hurtful. If they keep doing the same shit, right? So for me, with Azealia Banks, like, girl, I was, when she first came out, I was batting for her every turn.
Yeah. Yes.
I have fought with so many people defending her to, like, the death. Fuck. I think, where did she lose me for?
With the Trump shit?
Yeah.
¿Qué dijo?
She voted for him. She supported him. She would always be tweeting.
I didn't know that. Yes. Fuck. You just heard drop Azealia Banks.
Yeah. And the thing is that, like, a lot of the kids today, this is what upsets me about her too, is that, like, Azealia is very smart too. Like, I love her to death. And everything you said about how I, you know, sympathize with her, let me tell you, I sympathize with her to the max. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, up until last year, like, I still went to see her in concert, and she was 3 hours late, but I was still there.
Mm-hmm. I know, I saw her too. It was.
But I also saw her when she first came out in concert. Fucking, it was for a festival. I was sweating my life out.
At Coachella?
Like, yeah, ages ago.
I saw her too there.
And I was dehydrating as fuck. But I was in the front row.
Yes.
When she first came out.
Oh, so
and
good.
It was still the best, like,
performance of the fucking weekend. Yes.
And she was like a baby. I think she was like 18. She was like, I think, I don't even think she could drink at the time. And I was like, this girl is putting on a show that like outdoes the pop girls, the rap girls, hip hop, R&B girls by miles. Yes. Because this girl was like, you know, dancing and singing and like rapping, and like it was like smooth as fuck. And I was like, this girl's gonna make it big. And she's like, you know, maybe even bigger than Nicki Minaj, right?
In my head. We all thought that.
And, like, that's a thing that, like, a lot of the kids nowadays, is because a lot of people have amnesia when it comes to pop culture, right? It's so easy. A lot of the kids nowadays, there's a lot of kids who are, like, 22 and younger who go to bat for her and continue to make the same excuses for her that we used to make back in the day.
Yeah.
But then, and I remember a lot of them, like, she sends people for other artists too, right? So she'd be like, she'll call Cardi B on her transphobia. Right? And like Cardi B should be called out on her transphobia, right? Yeah. But then it's like, Azealia, you had a whole ass transphobic song that you, and you said a lot, you misgendered Laverne Cox when she was, you know, first coming on the scene. And then you made the song, I think it's called Us, on Fantasy. And that's a whole 2 minutes of transphobia.
Yeah.
Just like, and it's just like, how are you gonna come for someone when your own house isn't clean? Like, and that's something that I came at that one of the little Queer Eye kids recently, because he came after Nicki Minaj for doing an interview with Russian Vogue, I think. And he was like, you're helping this like anti-LGBT place, right? Russia or whatever. And I'm like, Jonathan, like, you literally gave a cop who was a Trump supporter
a makeover. Gross.
Girl, clean your damn house. Like, make sure that if you're going to call somebody out for shit, like, you ain't being violent in the same way. Like, that's an easy thing to do. And so when it comes to Azealia, I was like, every time I'm rooting for her, I'm just like, I have a lot of, even now that I should know better, I still follow her, and then I unfollow her, and it's just a cycle.
Or they kick her off of Twitter, and then she makes up another account.
Yeah. She's like on her 10th account.
I know. All right, well, we have to take a little break, and then we're going to come back with more with Ruben of Queer Chicano Chisme and some recommendations for everyone. Babelito, do you know this band called Caifanes?
I don't know them. Wait a minute. They're one of my fucking favorite bands.
Really?
Güey,
tell me.
Desde que estaba super chiquito, I used to listen to them. You know that my parents' honeymoon didn't take place till after like 10 years that they were married? And their song, right, and their song is La Negra Tomasa, because they actually went to Mazatlán as a honeymoon. And you know who else is from Mazatlán?
Who?
La banda sinaloense de Sergio Lizárraga.
What? Come through, Segway.
Okay. And they're going to be there also in the same concert. Wow. This is going to be around Mexican Independence Day, Viernes 14 de Septiembre, Friday, September 14, live at MGM Grand here in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada.
Oh, my God. Gosh, I am so excited. What a great venue, the MGM Grand. That's going to be legitimate, dog. I am so excited.
Dude, there's going to be banda dancing. And y como decimos en México, el slam se va a armar. It's going to be lit.
Ya se armó. Viernes 14 de septiembre at MGM Grand. Get your tickets now through axs.com. And we're back. All right, it's that time again. Recommendations time.
Let's let our guest begin.
Okay, let's start with Pose on FX.
Yes.
Which is like my show right now. If you have an extra $20, because you don't have FX, right? Because I don't have FX. Buy the season pass on iTunes if you can. You know, if you have to pirate it, girl, pirate it. But tweet about it and tell your friends about it.
Yes.
Because we need hype for this shit. Like, it is one of the first shows where it's like a mostly trans black and brown cast, right? With the first freaking trans director, Janet Mock, directed one episode. It's historic. It's beautiful. It's campy. It's funny. It's deep. So well acted. India Moore, who plays Angel on the show, I keep, like, every time I watch the episode, like, I have to end up tweeting, like, I quote a line that India Moore delivered very well, and I'm like, give her fucking Emmy.
Yes.
And, like, I add the Emmy people, and today she responded with a bunch of hearts. But yeah, give India Moore her Emmy for playing Angel on Pose FX. Y'all kids, y'all better watch this shit. So good. You will cry 20 minutes into every episode. Yeah.
The Mother's Day episode, bitch, the whole episode, I was crying. It was just the drama of the episode, but then to sit there and I was thinking, like, we are living in a time finally where there is a show where the trans characters are actually played by trans actors. And I could flip to another channel on TV and see a reality show. I'm talking about My House on Viceland. On Viceland, there's a show called My House that's like a docuseries about the ballroom scene, the ball scene right now in New York, right? And then you can flip to Stars and watch Vida that has, you know, lesbian characters and, you know, but there's choices for us.
Yeah.
Like, there's not just one show. And just thinking about that. Yeah, I mean, it made me so emotional, but I'm not caught up all the way on the show, but
I have my issues with Vida, but
yeah. Yeah, so do we. We talked about it.
You know,
yeah.
White Latinas winning or whatever, right?
Yeah, hashtag white power.
You know.
But let's stay positive with Pose, yes.
And with Vida, to its credit too, I think something powerful that they both did that I'm really thankful for finally seeing after so much time of not seeing it and it being really unpacked is like this horrible gaslighting that we experience in Latinx communities as queer and trans people, where our family blames us for our queerness, right? Yeah. They're like, you're a queer and this is why, you know, our family's fucked up and why don't you come around the house anymore? And it was like, you kicked me out. And it's like, no, we didn't. You left because, like, that's something that these, like, mm-hmm. these girls are experiencing, right? So, like, with Blanca on Pose, it was like they blame her for, you know, they'd say that she's been gone for her own choice, right? When it was like, no, you kicked her out because she was trans. And it was yeah. like, no, we kicked you out because you were, like, a sinner. And it's like, no, right? And with Vida, the, I don't know, the older white girl, her, you know, anyway.
I got you.
That older white Latina, she gets kicked, sent away because of her mama's internalized homophobia.
Yeah.
And everybody thinks that she's, like, that she hates her mom for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, no, like, there was queer antagonism that led to this hatred, but
yeah,
every time we try to express it, and I'm experiencing that in real life too, like being back home.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really refreshing and sad, but empowering in that, like, shit, we're all in this bola together, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
So yeah, that's my plug for a TV show. And for books, Zoe Samudzi's and William C. Anderson's As Black as Resistance is a look at, you know, the U.S. through a black anarchist anti-colonial lens. Beautiful. If you want an intro to the book, you should read their joint essay called Black as Anarchy, right? Which, you know, unpacks how, like, anarchy is black. And they quote a lot of indigenous people too, right? Because a lot of people think, like, oh, leftist politics, you know, anarchy is a white people thing. And it's like, nah, like, black people, indigenous people, people of color have been doing work in these spaces, right? And they outline how, right? Mm-hmm. And how we can continue this legacy. And so to me, these have been very important, especially because Zoe Samudzi has been very fundamental in my understanding of womanism, materialism, anarchy, and just, like, social cultural politics.
Yeah. How do you disconnect? Like, how do you, if you want to disconnect, do you go away? Do you turn off everything? Do you stop tweeting? I don't think you stop tweeting ever.
No, I don't.
But, like, how do you disconnect? Or do you ever feel the need to disconnect?
Right now, it's, like, my job. So
you can't.
I still haven't found that thing yet. I tried to leave for a while, but people kept, like, bringing me back, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so, right, my... the ways I disconnect are with other people, right? So
yeah,
having, you know, when I'm hanging out with people, I try to put my phone down and, like, not pick it up. Mm-hmm. My head's face down. Only thing I pick it up is to look at the time. I go running. I drink and dance. I play video games sometimes. Mm-hmm. I love Pokemon. Pokemon is, like,
your life.
I love Pokemon so much.
That's awesome.
And that's about it. Other than that, I just, like, right now, I'm in a sense of, like, I need to, like, hustle.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like...
you gotta pay those bills, girl.
Yeah, and yeah. I have to, like, you know... somebody wrote an article about Cardi B recently about how you have to, like, capitalize essentially on your moment. And mm-hmm. I think I've been having a moment for, like, the last 2 years. And there's a day when that's not gonna be a thing anymore. And,
right.
And so, you know, you gotta get it while it's good.
Yeah.
It's true. So my recommendation, it's old, but I've been listening to this album a lot. This is a local band, actually. It's called, the band is called Sin Color, and they're amazing.
Local to?
LA.
Oh, okay.
And the album is called, the band is called Sin Color, and the album is called Frutas. And it's like neo-disco. It's nothing new, but... first of all, the lead singer has some amazing pipes, like even operatic shit, and it's just good disco en español. So it's like listening to Hercules and Love Affair, but like with this girl in LA in Spanish, just all the ingredients that you need. And speaking of escaping, to me is music. So this album has been in repeat for a while, and I know it came out last year, but I don't care. Like, I'm listening to it right now, and we should support local talent. So yeah. Again, it's Frutas by the band Sin Color.
Yeah, they're really awesome, and they're super young too. I saw them recently at La Leaf at the festival they performed. Yeah,
they're so amazing.
Really awesome.
So amazing.
I guess that's how I escape too. I don't listen to, like, I really hate, like, political music.
I can't do it.
So I listen to, like, the most, like, vapid stuff too. Like, I guess that's why I like pop and, like,
yeah.
So I'm going to recommend actually some comedians. I've been watching a lot of comedy recently on Netflix. And I guess that's kind of how I escape too. And it's nice because I do a lot of, I'm a visual artist, so I make a lot of artwork that's like very tedious and takes a lot of time, but I can't watch like regular shows because I have to like pay attention to the visuals. Mm-hmm. But with comedy, you can kind of just put it on and hear
it.
Just
listen, yeah.
Which is amazing. So Netflix is doing this really awesome thing where they're doing comedies, like a comedy stand-up like lineups, and they're giving comics like lesser known comics like 15 minutes and then just doing these big specials with like six or seven and lining them up. So I think one of them is called The Stand-Ups, and then there's like several different ones. And somebody that I discovered recently is this queer black woman. Her name is Sam J. And she is fucking hilarious. A lot of people have been talking about also the new special Nanette. People went crazy about it. I wasn't as moved as everybody else.
High five. Me yeah. either. Oh, yes.
¿Cómo se llama? Anna.
I don't know their name.
Whatever her name is.
So my girl.
I still think you should watch it because a lot of people are moved by it. I didn't get why, but if you want to watch something, her delivery is different and I really appreciate that. And she actually, Babelito, I think you would enjoy it because she's an art historian, actually.
Oh, one a listener recommended me to listen to.
She has a whole bit about Van Gogh and like it's pretty cool. Yeah. So that is one of the some of the specials, and I appreciate Netflix kind of paying attention to newer comedians that are out that aren't as problematic as a lot of our faves that are out right now that are still saying stupid ass shit that they know they shouldn't be saying.
Yeah, like when it comes to comedy, sometimes it's hard because you have the same tropes. It's like you have this minority comedian who makes fun of its people.
Yeah.
And then everybody laughs because they feel comfortable they can laugh. And then after everybody like gets all their like their fucking prejudices out, then they go off for another culture. So like George Lopez has this whole thing against black people, and it's okay because he already made fun of his own people. And that seems like a recruiting trope.
Yeah.
So when you don't see that, it's fucking refreshing as fuck, and it feels good.
Yeah, so I used to be a stand-up comic, and I'm trying to get back into it too. So I used to lead the stand-up comedy club in my alma mater, and that was one of the things too, is like, we are not going to be problematic here. Like, we're going to... There's like, we're not going to be hurtful. We're going to be problematic, but there's like a smart way to toy with that. And so for me, there's like Kamau, W. Bell, right? W. Bell, Kamau. And then Hari, who's they have a podcast together.
Kandabalu, Kandabulu.
They are very good with that. I didn't like Nanette because it was too preachy for me. She's not saying anything that like, you know, survivor advocates, you know, and people of color haven't been saying for ages. She just like railed against white men for like a fucking 20 minutes. Like, I do that on my free time. Listen to me.
That's it, too easy.
But because she's like a white girl, right? It's this white woman, right? Yeah, she's a lesbian, but still, right? There are so many other places where this speech that she gave at the end, like, was better delivered. And for me, like, I get it. Some people never listen to that. And for them, it's important. It was but for impactful. Me, this is my life. Like,
right.
I spent my entire day talking about this shit. So that was like a waste of my time. Like, you know what lesbian white comic you should listen to? What? Dig Notaro.
Yes.
Dig Notaro.
I just watched her special too.
She's a fucking beast. Like,
did you see the one where the Indigo, where she's like,
yes!
Indigo girls.
I hated it the first time I saw it.
I was like, how long is this bit going to go
on? It was a half an hour.
She can stretch out a joke so that fucking bitch is brilliant.
Yeah,
she's amazing. I love her.
So the first time I saw that, I was like, fuck, this sucked. But I love her.
Yeah.
So how, what? And then I watched it again. I was like, no, she's a fucking genius.
She's brilliant.
The No Moleste joke is still my favorite.
No Moleste.
No Moleste.
Oh my gosh. I love that sometimes she doesn't even finish her jokes. It's just to make people uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's so good. Yeah. Tig's, I think it's just
so
called
she has
Tig.
A new,
The newest one, I think, is just called Tig or something.
Yeah, I think so.
Is it
on
Netflix?
Yeah.
I gotta watch it.
All her specials are on Netflix.
That shit,
it's so good.
Hey, Tig, shout out.
Shout out, Tig. Come on, Latinos Who Lunch.
Let me open for you one day.
Yeah. Ruben is ready. Yeah, queer Chicano chisme. He's got his crown ready. He's borrowing it from Gustavo's wife. Okay.
Thank you so much for being in our podcast. We've been talking about you being here for a while, so this is perfect.
I would invite you to mine, but our schedule's a mess.
Yeah. Maybe someday.
Yeah. You know what we should do? I'm going to have y'all on my YouTube channel because I can control food.
Hey. That's great.
Yeah. We're back in December, whenever. Yes.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Muchas gracias.
All right. Much love.
And as always, you can follow us at latinoswholunch.com. We're at Latinos Who Lunch on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. If you want to email us a question, you can send that to asklwlpod@gmail.com and we might read it on a future episode. Please go to our website and donate. If you can't donate, at least leave us a review. 5 stars.
5 estrellas. That's it.
Because the more reviews we have,
the more represented we are.
And
representation matters.
Bitch, you need to work on that.
Okay.
Come on.
We got some good feedback from listeners, but anyway, okay.
Today's episode was produced by Justin Favela and Emmanuel Ortega. Our intern is Carla Lagunas. By the way, we need a new intern. She's been our intern for like 2 years.
I love you, Carla.
I'm gonna give her benefits.
I know. Marketing assistance by Hector Aguilar. Music by the band Brownout. I'm Fabi Fab.
And I'm Babelito.
Bye.
Ciao.